it's what it's about. It's what college athletics is about. It's what coaching is about, that you hope and pray that you can give the experience to these kids that they so badly want.
This is the Sean Miller Podcast, presented by Deer Park Roofing. Now, here's your hosts, Paul Frichtner and Adam Baum.
Welcome into another episode of the Sean Miller Podcast. Paul Frichtner alongside Adam Baum. And today we are joined by a very special guest. Over to my left, it is the head baseball coach here at Xavier University, Billy O'Connor. This podcast is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Deer Park Roofing, as well as the official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and our friends at TGE Solar. Billy, it's great to be here with you to give you an introduction and to give people that are listening to this some background on you. You started your playing career at Indiana. You played your final two seasons here at Xavier. You were part of the school's first NCAA tournament all the way back in 2009. You were the A-10 tournament's most outstanding player that year. You played a couple years professionally before you got into coaching. Then you joined here as an assistant in 2014 when Xavier's in the Big East. You win the 2014 Big East title, go to the program's second ever NCAA tournament. You win two straight Big East tournaments in 16 and 17 as an assistant. And then at the time, head coach Scott Guggins, who had been here forever, a Xavier legend, he goes and takes the head job at the University of Cincinnati. You're promoted to the head coach. And last year, you win your first Big East tournament as a head coach of this program. So baseball here at Xavier has gone to the NCAA tournament five times. And the common denominator in all of them is Billy O'Connor. But maybe the most important thing and why I'm sitting in the middle of you guys and the thread that ties you both together is that you're both proud Elder Panthers.
That's right, Paul.
And I considered showing up on this show in the Elder Panther mascot and just sitting here like a stooge for 40 minutes and letting you guys go back and forth. But Adam, I'll let you take the reins on that one.
I've been in that costume before. It's hot and it doesn't smell great, Paul. No. Billy and I, we go way back. Teammates in high school. Played football and baseball together. And I know you're not going to brag about yourself, so allow me to do it for you. But Billy was starting wide receiver on the football team, starting point guard on the basketball team, and he was the starting catcher on the baseball team. And just to make things very clear, Billy was the starting catcher. I was the bullpen catcher. So I got him ready for Billy when the game started.
I didn't even know bullpen catchers existed in high school.
Absolutely. We had the best one in the country. There's no doubt about that.
Billy, it's great to have you on. It's great to be able to talk to you in this platform, especially with the success that the baseball team has had over the last 15 years that you've been here. But thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me. And again, obviously, this is an awesome platform for everything about Xavier, you know, and for us to get this opportunity to talk a little bit about Xavier baseball. It's really cool. And I'm appreciative.
So let's go back to what we were just talking about with being here. You're a Cincinnati guy. You're a West Side guy. What do you think the numbers are going to do for this podcast on the West Side of Cincinnati?
Be big on the West. I mean, Billy's dad is my dentist, for crying out loud. A staple on the West Side.
There's going to be a watch party at the Champions whenever this comes out.
Absolutely.
But Billy, to start your playing career at Indiana, to come out of Elder, actually, you know what, before we get to Indiana, let's start with Elder. Let's start with your career and your background here in Cincinnati, and basically just to lay the foundation of what this city means to you and to be here still in coaching here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, growing up on the West Side of Cincinnati, it's a blue collar tough like Adam is. you know, I mean, you learn a lot of great principles that are going to guide you through the rest of your life. And I look back to the people that I was surrounded with, the coaches I had, and they certainly have formed me into the person that I am today, you know. And obviously getting the chance to remain in your hometown, to coach at the school where you graduated from, it's incredibly meaningful. You know, you look at a lot of coaches throughout every sport, throughout this whole industry, that bounce from spot to spot to spot. And, you know, wherever your feet are, again, you're going to find some allegiance there. But to be able to do this at a place that means so much to me, where I spent, you know, formative years of my life and long before I went to school here, coach here as a huge Xavier basketball fan, it's extra meaningful. So it's really cool to be able to represent this school.
So you decide to go from Elder to Indiana, but then you go from Indiana back here to Xavier. So take us through that whole.
Yeah, really, it was just trying to find a place where somebody would take me. I was originally committed to Miami University. There's a coaching change there. The coach left Miami and went to Indiana, and I went there with him, wanted to be somewhere where somebody at least kind of knew me a little bit. Played a lot as a freshman, hardly played at all as a sophomore. We weren't very good. Wasn't the right environment for me. You know, what happens today with me on the other side of the recruiting process of kids visiting and really assessing their options, like, I didn't do that. I had one option and that's where I went. And it didn't end up being the right option for me. And Indiana's a great school and my coaches were great there. It just wasn't the right fit. I had some friends that were playing at Xavier at the time and thought that maybe be an opportunity to come over here and play close to home. And it ended up lining up perfectly. I came in, was able to start for a couple of years. We won a couple championships and really have never left since. So, you know, even as unhappy as I was at my first school, there's stress, right? The unknown is always scary. And I talk to kids that go through the transfer process now. The unknown's scary. There's no doubt about it. But it's the best decision I've ever made in my entire life and really has formed the rest of my life since then. So, again, yeah, it was it wasn't the pathway that I thought I was ultimately going to take, sure. but it certainly worked out.
Yeah, and let's not forget, you know, you ended your high school career with a baseball state championship, so...
That was pretty cool. Yeah. I was lucky. pretty nice way to put a cherry on top of the high school experience.
Yeah, but when did it become real in your mind, like, hey, I want to be a coach? Because the thing that I remember about you in high school, and it's interesting because, like, it's such a cliche, but for you, I think it was actually very true, was, like, Billy's like a coach on the field, you know? And I don't know that anyone ever talked to you about that or you were aware of it, but that was very much a real thing. So when did it become real when you stopped playing?
Honestly, so, you know, I played a little bit of pro ball after college. I played in the Rangers organization for a year, and then I played a year of independent ball at the Washington Wild Things. And Coach Googans, that season ran up, I think August 31st was the last day. And Coach Googans reached out to me sometime in mid-August. He's like, hey, what do you think about coming to be our volunteer assistant? And I was like, well, I don't have anything to do. So that sounds like a decent idea. but it wasn't at that point, I was still like, I'm still playing. I'm still going to keep pushing and trying to be a big leaguer, which I never was going to be. But I came in and started working with Coach Googans in that fall of 2010. And about 2 days in, was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. This is the coolest thing you can do besides playing, right? And in my time as a player certainly was coming to an end. It's like, yeah, I think this is what I want to do right now. So it was never a plan. Like, I always loved being a part of the game, loved being on the court, on the field, on whatever. But my master plan was never like, I want to become a coach someday. It just kind of happened organically. And it was very fortunate to have the right connections and catch the right breaks, honestly. There's multiple times throughout my early coaching career where it was like, man, this might be it. You know, like you run into a wall where it's like, I'm 25 years old, not making any money. Like, got a degree from Xavier. I could make some money if I wanted to. When do you draw that line? You know, and it's tough. And I've, you know, when I talk to younger coaches nowadays, you don't know when that break's going to come. And there's no guarantee that the break will come. But you have to believe in the process and you believe in your abilities and your work ethic and you believe that it's all going to work out. And luckily, you know, some crazy events led to it ultimately working out for me. So I was very fortunate.
I think it's important before we get too far down the road here to kind of set the stage with a name you just mentioned, Scott Googans, who is been very important for this program for a long time and obviously left, took the job at Cincinnati, but coached you, was the head coach at Xavier when you came on as assistant, like you just mentioned. So what did Scott mean for you earlier in your career and bringing you on and giving you that opportunity? Because for anybody that's in this building and has been around this building since Scott was here, very special and near and dear to a lot of people.
No doubt. I mean, he's an incredible mentor. He's a father figure for me. And again, I have a great father too, so it's not like he's filling a gap there. But, you know, the amount of time I spent from him for around him for 10 straight years, like it formed me into the person that I am. It formed me into the coach that I am, you know, and so many of the things that I say, so many of the ideals that I have, so many of the things that we do as a program are built upon what he built here, you know, and he really turned the tide. Like, quite honestly, there wasn't a ton of success in this program until he got here, turned it around, had a ton of success. So, he's a great person. He's a great coach. He's a great person. He's a mentor. He's a leader. He's all the things that I strive to be as a coach. And really everything that we're doing right now is built upon the success that he built here.
So you spend 2 years as the volunteer assistant mm-hmm. here at Xavier, and then you spend 1 year as an assistant at NKU. Mm-hmm. And then you come back here to Xavier as an assistant in 2014.
Correct.
So that whole web of you're still around Cincinnati, right? You're still here. Whether you're at Xavier or NKU, you're still around. So was it always, I just got to get back to Xavier?
Yeah, that was certainly the goal. I mean, like I said, this is a special place to me, you know, and getting the chance to work for Coach Googans was an awesome opportunity. Yeah. You know, worked out in Northern Kentucky where it was time for me to see something different. Went there for 1 year for the 2013 season. It was the first year they transitioned to D1. We went 8-47. learned a lot of things. Learned some patience. And those are great guys over there. Honestly, the losing sucked. There's no doubt about that. But the experience was fun. I enjoyed that being there, and I enjoyed seeing a different perspective. And I think that's important as a coach, is that you see different things, good things, bad things, whatever, but it gives you some perspective on what really matters to you and what you want to do when you get the chance to take over your own program. So that year at NKU was a learning year for sure. And then, you know, crazy sort of circumstances, kind of things moved. And that really was kind of the end of the line for me. I was, again, 25 years old, 3 years as a volunteer assistant, never made a dime in this profession. And it's like, ah, man, it's about time to start making a little bit of money. And luckily, the breaks happened that year for me to be able to come back to Xavier and get the opportunity to work in a paid position.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people who watch this episode, they know you. They know who you are. They know what you're about. But if you're watching this and you don't know about Billy, Billy's a fiery guy, a competitive guy. And it's interesting because normally the person who sits there in that chair is very similar in a lot of ways to you, Sean Miller. So I think where I was going with this was, you know, there were some things earlier this year. I think we'll talk about that maybe down in the bayou. But in baseball, they don't give out technical fouls.
They don't.
If they did, how often do you think you'd get teed up in a baseball game?
So in baseball, you get a balls and strikes warning.
Yeah.
That's kind of your technical. Again, there's no free throws. There's no penalty. But it's like you're like, hey, man, like you're stepping up to the line right now. And don't take another step or it's going to be the end of the day for you. I get about one of those a weekend. So we're, you know, 28 games in right now. So I think I've got 8 or 10 balls and strikes warnings right now. But yeah, I'm glad there's no technicals in baseball. Yeah.
But you kind of went viral a little bit earlier this season down at LSU. Can you talk to us about what happened down there?
Yeah, and I don't know if anybody from the Big East is watching. Or the NCAA. I don't want to, you know, pick up a fine on the Sean Miller podcast for, you know, talking about officiating. But, you know, it was a tough game. We're battling. Our guys are playing really hard, and it felt like every 50-50 call was going against us, you know. And obviously when you're in the environment at a place like LSU where there's 10,000 fans there and they're screaming and yelling and you feel like they might have some influence on those 50-50 calls, you get to a point where you feel like you need to stand up for your guys, you know. And we never want our guys talking to the umpires. We never certainly want our guys getting ejected for anything. And I don't want to get ejected. But sometimes there you get to a point where, again, you're not putting on a show, but you want to make sure that, you know, your guys know that you're standing up for them and they have their back. And I think they know after that game that I had their back. But, you know, it's all in good fun. The crazy thing about baseball is that, you know, you get ejected and you tell some guy he stinks. And then the next day, you know, 12 hours later, you're at the plate meeting. You got to shake hands with him, look him in the eye and be ready to go again the next day. And they're professional about it. And I try to be professional. It's nothing personal, obviously. You just move on to the next day. But, yeah, you got to stand up for your guys sometimes. And I think Sean does that too.
Yeah.
I remember last year, Billy, I think it was last year. It might've been 2 years ago. So UConn joined the Big East a few years ago, and they've been year over year, a program that, you know, has aspirations, whether winning the Big East tournament or making the NCAA tournament as an at-large team. They always have very lofty expectations. Jim Pender's the head coach at UConn. You know, he's set a standard there. And I remember last year, I think it was last year, you know, UConn, you guys in UConn have really had a lot of battles over the years, whether it's in the Big East tournament, whether it's in regular season games, whatever. And I went up to interview Billy, I think after the Friday game. Do you remember this?
I do. I apologize.
No. I apologize because it was a bad question, but I think it was after the Friday game. I phrased it wrong and I said something to the effect, because, you know, there have been a lot of games where UConn's just had your number. Mm-hmm. And I said something to the effect, and it was one of those things, Adam, you know, where you're going to ask a question and you just can't take it back fast enough. Effect of, man, Billy, you played this one close, you lost by one in extra innings. Is there anything you can take away positive from this game? And then the worst words in sports came out of my mouth: moral victories.
No more.
And the next day it was close again. I think you lost in extra innings again the next day, or it was close, whatever it was. And you, I go to ask Billy to do the post game interview, and he goes, "Paul, no effing moral victories today."
Yeah, I remember that because we were up two in the ninth. We gave a 2-run home run, and then a 2-run home run to trail and lose. And yeah, that was I remember that. And again, I felt bad. I really did. Like the next day, but I was like, I know I better get this out before we get on camera because if you ask on camera, we're gonna have to delete this whole thing, I think.
But the funny thing was, I had looked at Mike Schmaltz, who was my broadcast partner. He and I have broadcasted here forever. He's broadcasted baseball long before I was even here back in 2015-16. But I looked at Mike before we walked out on the field and I said, "I'm not asking him one thing about positives to take away from today." Because that was a doubleheader. That was the second game of a doubleheader. Yep. You guys had lost, and I knew it was going to leave a sour taste in your mouth because you had won the first game and you were so close to sweeping the day. But all of that is to say, I thought that was a very well put picture of how fiery you are and how much you care. And to me, I love that. Like, I took no offense to that. I laugh about it still because for me, like, I didn't play baseball in college. I played baseball forever growing up. I played varsity baseball through my senior year. It was my favorite sport forever. I just didn't have the physical ability to play it in college. But to me, if I was a player, hearing stuff like that or watching you for years on the side or in the dugout, like, that fieriness and that competitiveness, the players got to love it, right? And you see it kind of draws out of them.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's, you know, it's my personality and you can't fake who you are as a person. But, you know, that's the kind of energy, that's the kind of culture that I want to have, of guys that care, guys that are passionate, you know. And it's not fake. Like, I want to win every game so bad I can't stand it. You know, when it doesn't go right, the maturity that I hope that I have at 37 years old now is that you can process it and move on. But in the moment, in the excitement, like, yeah, that's it. Like, I want this to be life or death. At the end of the day, it's like, it's baseball. It's a game. It doesn't matter in the real world. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of what life's about. But for those 3 hours and those 9 innings, it is everything. It's all that matters to me. You know, I want to make sure that our guys feel the same way when they go about their business. So, yeah, I mean, it's you try to set the tone for what the culture is and with your personality. You try to be, you know, like Coach Coogan's did for me, you try to be a great role model, a great leader of what it's supposed to look like, you know. And I think that's investing fully in what we're doing and also understanding that, man, you're not going to win every game, especially with the schedule we play. Like, defeat is part of it. Part of the beauty of competition is that you aren't guaranteed to win. You look at our schedule, there's not a cupcake on there, right? I don't like playing the little sisters of the poor and beating up on them 30 to nothing. Like, that doesn't interest me. The fun to me is going in and it's a 50-50 game and you've got to compete. You've got to execute. And when you do that at the end of it, man, the feeling that you get from that, there's nothing better than in the entire world.
Yeah, and I know Paul wanted to talk to you about that because one of the things we wanted to bring up on the show was that, again, to your personality, like, you do not shy away from any challenges. Am I right, Paul?
No, not at all. I think the schedule here, and again, not to do a ton of the talking because you're the guest, but I think it really is important for people that may not follow college baseball, or for Xavier fans listening that don't follow the program as closely as we do. It's, you have to build a schedule where, you know, you're traveling south, you start the season in February, but it's cold up here and you got to go play an SEC schedule or an ACC schedule. You got to find these teams that are down in the Carolinas or Florida. You take a spring break trip out to California, whatever it is, Texas. This year it was LSU. You set that schedule up so that by the time you get to Big East play, whether you're competing for an at-large bid or not, you know that you're probably going to have to win the Big East tournament, or maybe you win a few. Like this year, you've set yourself up very well for an at-large bid, at least to this point, 14-14 on the season. When you are sitting there in the offseason and deciding what murderer's row of a schedule you want to play, how do you do that year over year?
It's a good question. You know, there's some different factors that go into it. Honestly, experience is part of it. You know, playing at LSU, playing at Alex Box, like, that's pretty cool. You know, winning a game there, that's really cool. So that's certainly part of it. And, you know, I think we have a bunch of guys on our team that would have loved to have gone to an SEC school, you know, and played at LSU, but not all of them had that opportunity. Not all of them had that opportunity, but I think a lot of them have a chip on their shoulder because of it, you know. And I know as a coach, I know when I played, it's like, yeah, I want to show that I could have done this. I can do this. We're just as good as LSU or Clemson or whoever it may be on our schedule. So experience is certainly part of it. But preparation for what we're trying to do is important too. You know, I think adversity is such an opportunity for growth, you know, and I say this and it sounds weird, but I try to create adversity for our guys. I try to create a really difficult schedule. I try to create some tough travel situations where you got to fly to Oregon and you have a red eye on the way back and then you play Louisville on Tuesday the next day. Man, take all the excuses out. You know, like it's just about competing. Like there's going to be days you feel great. There's going to be days you're tired. There's going to be days you had a test that day. You crammed the night before, your body's sore, your arm's sore. You're in a fight with your girlfriend. Bad travel, tough environment, bad umpires. Take it all out. It's all adversity and it's all opportunities for growth. And again, you get that when you play on the road at Clemson. You get that when you play on the road at LSU or Louisiana Tech or all these different environments that, man, they're really, really challenging. And those different opportunities for growth, they accumulate, you know, and when you get through 28 games in non-conference and you hit UConn, you think that you're ready to go. You think that you've seen everything. Every piece of adversity that you can hit, man, you've hit it. You've had the bad travel. You've had the bad umpires. You've had the tough competition. You've had all those different things and you're prepared for it, you know? And I think if you look at the track record of success that we've had within the conference tournament, but especially when we get into the NCAA tournament, we're prepared. There's nothing that we see that we aren't ready for, you know, playing Vanderbilt on the road in an elimination game. Okay, it's awesome. Great fans, great team. This isn't something we're not ready for, you know? So again, I say it all the time, but we schedule with the postseason in mind more so than with the season in mind. You know, I love winning. Listen, I wish we were 28-0, I do. But I'd rather be 14-14 against the schedule that we played than 28-0 and not know who we are as a team. I know who we are as a team. There's things we can get better at, but we've been tested and there's no challenge that we're going to back down from. And I think that stems from the schedule we put together every year.
That's West Side mentality right there, Paul. No, I think in terms of similarities, I'll bring it back to Sean Miller. And, you know, I think like Sean has talked on this podcast about how when you win, you live, and when you lose, you die for a period of time until you revive yourself. I think we're hearing that echoed a little bit, but the difference is in baseball, you're going to lose more, but you're not going to have to sit with those losses for nearly as long. You know, you lose a game on a Friday, you get to tee it up and toe the line again 24 hours later, the very next day. So it's like, it's almost a situation where as much as you hate losing, the next day brings a new opportunity to get over it.
100%. And the reverse is 100% true too, right? You beat LSU on Sunday. You feel great about life. There's another game. You don't get to sit back and celebrate that win over LSU for 3 weeks. You got to go play Wright State, a really good team on a Tuesday. We didn't play them very well, right? Yeah. And that's another opportunity to learn from when we have a big win, when we win our first game in the Big East tournament, our first game in the NCAA tournament. How do you respond to that adversity of the incredible success that is? So again, you learn from everything, you know, and you hope that you accumulate all these different opportunities for growth, all these opportunities to learn as the season goes, that you're a finished product as you get close to the season. 28 games in right now, we're not a finished product. We've got growth opportunities still ahead of us. You hope as you get to May, man, you start to look like a finished product. And I think over the course of, you know, my coaching career, our time over the course past 10 years here at Xavier, and I think we're usually a pretty good finished product come May.
The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit DeerParkRoofing.com. The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Payroll Partners, where you're not just a number. That means providing a best-in-class HR and payroll experience that was built on award-winning technology and live support customer service with a dedicated payroll specialist who's just a phone call away. You shouldn't have to choose between technology and customer service. At Payroll Partners, you get both. Payroll Partners is locally owned and operated by a proud Xavier alum. Visit payrollpartners.net. That's payrollpartners.net. You get down to the Big East tournament time in the postseason. Last year, you get down to Vanderbilt. And that was, the third time in the last four tournaments you'd played in the Nashville Regional, mm-hmm. right? So 2016, you did, and you beat Vanderbilt in that regional. Then in 17, when you win again, you go down to Louisville. But last year, you get put in Nashville against Vanderbilt. And Also there was Oregon, who you had played earlier in the season. You had this opportunity to go to Nashville and beat a Vanderbilt team that is one of the best programs in the sport year over year. And then you get to the ninth inning. It's a beautiful day in Nashville. Adam, you weren't there, so I'll set the scene for you, Adam. Billy remembers.
Yeah.
Adam, it was a beautiful day in Nashville. You couldn't have asked for better weather that day.
I can imagine it, right?
So just imagine blue sky, not a cloud in the sky, right? Great sunshine. Vibes are high for the Xavier Musketeers.
What's the score at this point?
I believe the Musketeers are up 1.
2-1. 2-1 Muskies.
2-1. Okay. Dramatic. Player got hit by a pitch and the bases are loaded. Run scores. You're 3 outs away from knocking Vanderbilt out of their own regional. All of a sudden, the players start leaving the field. I'm looking at Mike Schmaltz. I'm going, Mike, I don't know why everybody's leaving the field. I see the umpires do the sign that the weather's coming in. I said, the weather's coming in. There's no weather. There's beautiful weather. Billy, what would your assessment of the weather be that day?
It seemed playable. It did. It seemed playable. It seemed playable.
So we then waited, 4 hours?
4 hours.
To play the next 3 outs, and it took 3 minutes to get 3 outs to send Vanderbilt effectively home. They were home, but to send them home from their own regional. And you went to another regional final. Now, it didn't work out. Oregon went on to win the region. But to beat Vanderbilt in the way that it happened, I would love for you to just take me through that 4.5-hour stretch from taking the lead to going into the ninth inning, being all geared up, and then having to just sit.
Stress. Pacing. I've got an Apple Watch and it tells me resting heart rate. And every once in a while, like the end of the season, I'll go back and I'll be like, oh, yep, that bolt, that burst on there, that's when we hit a walk-off home run, or that's when we got a big strikeout. There's about a 4.5-hour period there where my heart was about to explode. As a player, I never stressed, right? You just go play, you just go do it. As a coach, that's all I do is stress because you can't control it quite as much. You control it in the practice, you control it in the preparation. But you can't go do it, and you certainly can't control the weather. That's part of it. So again, it was adversity, like we talked about. Been through things like that before. And credit to our guys, they stayed loose. We had brought our closer in the eighth, and he wanted the ball. And he took it in the ninth and stayed in, which was a crazy situation, and finish it off. But an incredible amount of respect for what Vanderbilt is as a program. Coach Corbin's one of the best in the business. It was a special win. It's a special win to win over an SEC opponent or Vanderbilt or LSU or whoever anytime, but to do it in an elimination game like that and to overcome what felt like, I know our fans thought there was some behind the scenes action.
I'll speak for you, Billy.
It was, everyone was following protocols. I think there's a lightning bolt that clipped 7.9 miles away and never to be seen again. But, it was certainly some adversity we overcame. I was proud of our guys. It was a really cool experience.
I'll be honest. For my money, March Madness is 1, and right below it, 1B is College Baseball World Series. I got to go with Mark Thompson, our high school baseball coach, when it was still at Rosenblatt. Mm-hmm. If people aren't familiar or they aren't aware, the college baseball postseason is so awesome.
It's electric.
I love everything about it.
It's electric, because again, upsets happen in basketball and March Madness, obviously, but in baseball, the same things happen, obviously I'm a baseball guy, you guys are baseball guys, but just the rhythm of baseball, it's fun. And it's a different rhythm than basketball. Basketball is great on its own too, but the rhythm of offense and defense and pitching, it's cool. It's electric. It's 3 hours of excitement, with peaks and valleys. Basketball can kind of be like, man, it stays up there the whole time. Like baseball, you get this rush and then it's like, okay, we're going to flip sides here. And it's like, okay, we get another rush. So especially when you get to May into June when it's the postseason, it's a great environment.
I think to your point, Adam, college baseball has really taken off here in the last few years. The growth of the sport's been fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. All the metrics, all the viewership, all the attendance, everything is spiking in a major way. So it's cool. It's cool to see. I feel our support has grown. Yeah. I feel like there's more support to be had, obviously. But I feel like we're on the upside of something special right now.
So I want to ask you about recruiting here to Xavier, because physically Hayden Field, for people to know, it's 310 down the lines. It's 355 to the gaps. I don't think it's 400 to center.
No.
So it's not a pitcher's park. It is very much a hitter's park here at Xavier. But I'm curious, one, recruiting pitching to Xavier, because you always have a great lineup. You always have a lineup that is leading the conference in one thing or another, hitting. But recruiting pitchers to Hayden Field, and just in general, what is it like for you recruiting to Xavier?
It's no big deal. You know, we talk about, it's an advantage for us. We practice at our field every single game. We're accustomed to our field. You know, it's nothing new to us. And we talk about, you know, you got to be able to make guys miss. There's some pop-ups that turn into home runs here, you know, but if you make them swing and miss, then there's no home runs coming from that. So it's nothing too special. You know, we recruit the best players we can find, and, you know, we play enough games on the road where it doesn't make too big of a deal, honestly, whether we're recruiting at our field or not our field. We just recruit the best players we can find.
But in general, too, just recruiting any player to Xavier into a program that is north of the SEC or north of that warm weather, do you find yourself sometimes trying to navigate how to do that in different ways?
Sure. But I mean, it's like anything else in life. It's like the work you put in, right? If you work really hard, it's going to ultimately work out for you. And you have to invest yourself in the process. You have to invest yourself in the relationships you're building. And no different than going out on the field and playing against Clemson or LSU, like, you're not going to win all the time, you know, and that hurts when you're truly invested in a relationship and you feel like you can help change this kid's life and help mold them into player they want to be and help them reach their goals and get to the next level. And they feel like there's a different opportunity that's available to them. It hurts, you know, when you're truly invested in that. But just like when you lose to LSU on Friday night, you got to show up the next day. You know, you got to go recruit the next kid and you got to be able to deal with that hurt. So, it comes down to hard work, comes down to investment, comes down to, you know, really truly building a relationship with kids. And I think when you do that, I think there's a connection that's made, and you're not going to get a yes from every single kid. We get a lot of no's, I promise you, you know, but it's not really about the kids that say no. It's about the ones that say yes and want to be a part of this, because Xavier's a special place.
Yeah. College baseball, all of college sports have changed, particularly recently. We've talked a lot on the show about how the transfer portal has changed things, about how name, image, and likeness has changed things. And we know primarily about that through the lens of college basketball. But what have the changes been like and felt like on the baseball front?
Yeah, it feels like every year you're managing a different aspect of building a roster and recruiting. And the NIL is certainly trickling in. You know, it's something that we're starting to feel a little bit, and something that we're starting to focus on a little bit more, probably a little bit, you know, definitely a little bit behind where college basketball and college football are as a sport. The transfer thing, the portal, it's changed the dynamics of how college baseball operates, you know, for better or for worse. You know, I transferred, you know, so I can't sit here and say that, you know, transfer is taking the easy way out and it's a terrible thing and it's bad for the sport and it's bad for college athletics. Listen, I was at a place where I wasn't good enough to play consistently, and I wanted to play consistently. I came to Xavier that Indiana wins because I'm off their roster. I wasn't good enough to be on their roster. Xavier wins because they got a starting catcher. I win because I got to play and we won championships. Like, man, that's like check all the boxes, like win, win, win. And I think, from my seat, I think that's the way the portal should operate. You know, the whole pimp yourself out to the highest bidder and put yourself out on the open market and, you know, bail on the people that may have truly developed you and given you the opportunity and treated you the right way. I don't know if that's the intent of the transfer portal, but you can't separate the two, you know, and from a roster construction standpoint, we've certainly used the transfer portal. We will continue to use the transfer portal, but I also don't want to build our roster solely through the transfer portal. You know, I think that when you do that, I think you're much more apt for the peaks and valleys, you know, and you look across college athletics and I think you see that sometimes where it's like, man, this team was really good this year and they aren't very good this year, and it's not really their fault, but it's just nature of the beast of, man, there's half the team left and we brought in new guys, and it's tough to form a culture. It's tough to form, you know, the sustainable culture that we want, that I think every coach wants, when 80% of your roster is new every single year, you know? And that's something that I think you have to balance as a coach, of putting together a roster that you supplement what you have. You know, if, man, it's like, we really need a left-handed pitcher, we need a left-handed batter, we need a catcher. Like, man, that transfer portal instant gratification. You can go get somebody and they're on your field in a month and they're playing for you in 6 months. In the high school recruiting process, it's a much longer, much slower, much more delayed gratification process of kids commit when they're 16 years old and they don't play for you until they're 19. So the portal's great in that way that, it allows water to find its level. It allows you to fill holes. But I think it's dangerous to base your team solely on the portal, you know, because I think for me, our culture is what makes us special. The core of who we are is development. It's hard work. It's tight knit. It's closeness. It's family. And I think when you have so much transactional movement that I think it gets diluted a little bit. So again, it is what it is, you know, like it's part of college athletics now. NIL is part of college athletics now. Transfer portal is part of college athletics now. You can sit back and say, this is what's wrong with it. This isn't great. Or you can just embrace it and adapt, you know? And I think that's the way you have to approach it, is embrace and adapt. And man, 2 years from now, there's going to be some crazy thing in college athletics that we've never even thought about right now that's going to change the way we do things. And we'll embrace it. We'll adapt when we get to that point.
Yeah. Hopefully that crazy thing is like you can welcome in like 38-year-old bullpen catchers for a season or something, because I would come out of retirement for you, Billy.
I appreciate that.
Who throws the hardest on your team? Could I catch them?
Absolutely. There's not a human being that throws a baseball hard enough that you couldn't catch, Adam.
I love that. You heard that here on the Sean Miller podcast.
How much has the Champion Center helped you guys?
Oh, it's incredible. You know, and 5 years ago, before, you know, we had the facilities we had, man, it was our recruiting was built entirely on relationships. It was like, let's not show them anything, you know, like let's go still walk around Cintas a long time and not worry about the locker room. Now, like, we have incredible stuff. You know, we were down at LSU a couple weeks ago and like our guys are walking around and just without bringing it up, they're like, man, our stuff's as nice as their stuff, you know? So to be able to still continue to build, recruit off of the relationships we build, like that's always going to be the core of what we do. But also to show them really nice things, man, you get to a point as a recruiter where it's like, why wouldn't you say yes? You know, you don't have a reason to not say no. In the past, it was like, well, facilities weren't very good. That's my reason for no. And it's like, that stinks, but I understand. Now it's like, there's no reason to say no. The level of competition, the facilities, the resources, the relationships, the development, like, man, we check all the boxes. So why wouldn't you say yes against any other school we're recruiting against right now?
Mike Schmaltz, who I know is listening to this, my broadcast partner with you for the baseball games. If he's listening to this show and I don't bring this up, he'll be very upset. So you talk about the facilities. I know you had to do it, Billy. You had to go get a turf field. But what you took away from us, Billy, is that you took away how well you manicured the dirt field. Going out there on a rainy Saturday morning and seeing you with the pants rolled up, spreading the quick dry, raking the field and doing all that, or going out after the game and raking the batter's box, or even in between innings where you throw the mask on and you're catching the warm-up pitches, you are the epitome of leading by example from that perspective.
I do miss aspects of our dirt and grass field, the way my brain works, like clean lines and like that, like when that hits some dopamine up in my brain somewhere. So I missed that aspect of it. It was certainly my happy place to groom the plate before the game, get me in a good frame of mind. And then post game, man, especially after a loss, there's nothing that kind of, again, gave me a little bit of a dopamine hit, I think, than making sure everything's perfect, even if we lost. So I miss that aspect. What I don't miss is the rain. I don't miss the tarp. I don't miss all the other stuff that goes along with the dirt and grass field. And purely from a development standpoint, like, man, us getting turf is a game changer, and I can't believe we didn't get it sooner, even being somebody that loved the dirt and grass field, because we're out there every single day. You know, there's not a bad day where you can't get out there and get your work in. So it's awesome. There's times I miss the dirt and grass, but it's been a huge win having turf.
Yeah. That's West Side. Just roll your sleeves up. Get out. That's right.
Get to work, man. No one's going to do it for you.
That's right.
I have two more questions that I wanted to ask before we let you go, Billy, because I know you're kind of strapped for time here, but I want to take you back last year to the Big East tournament, because you had a player on a team, Jack Housinger, who had meant a lot to this program for a long time, spent a lot of time around Xavier baseball and had one of the best players here in recent years. He came up to the plate in the ninth inning of the Big East tournament championship game last year. Xavier's losing, men on base, hits a ball that I think all of us thought was a home run, ended up going off the wall with a triple. He'd take the lead in the ninth inning against UConn. and you win the Big East tournament to go to the NCAA tournament and avenge what had been a tough loss in the Big East tournament title game to UConn the year before. Can you just take me through that game, the emotion of that, getting to the final inning and seeing Jack get to the plate and send you guys to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, and again, I'm biased, but like they could make a movie about that whole situation, you know, like where he had been. So I'll start with Jack's backstory. Jack's small, not a big guy, you know. He wasn't heavily recruited, you know. Like I don't think he had many, if any, Division I options besides Xavier. Came to Xavier and had to prove himself from day one, and did. And because of who he is and the chip on his shoulder and the way that he works and his work ethic and his knowledge of the game, and also he is talented, like, don't get me wrong. But what made Jack special was who he is as a person, you know. And from day one, invested at the highest level you can possibly invest in Xavier. Worked incredibly hard, had a great career. You see the success that he had. And leading up to, you know, he was a redshirt or a COVID guy, right? Yep. So his first year was lost to COVID, or one of his years was lost to COVID. So he finished his academic senior year, his redshirt junior year in the 2022 season, you know, and we lost in the championship to UConn. And Jack had an awesome year. I think he had 15 home runs, hit 300, played shortstop every day for us. And, you know, at the end of the year, I never really talked about this publicly. Hopefully Jack doesn't get upset. But at the end of the year, you have end of the year meetings with everybody. And Jack and I had it out, like got into each other for like 2 straight hours, you know, about things that he felt that we could do differently in the program. And, you know, like me defending to an extent, but also like, man, there's things you can do differently too. And, to the point where there is probably, you know, 2-3 days there where I didn't think he was going to be a part of our program moving forward. I thought he was going to go in the portal. I thought he was going to go somewhere else. I thought he was going to, you know, say, you know what, this isn't for me anymore. And we talked, you know, and we worked through those things and we got on the same page and he invested and he came back for that fifth year. And man, he was so invested, you know, like, and that's what, when you're as close as Jack and I are, you know, when you're truly invested in both of us are like, we're the same people. We really are, you know, and that can be a combustible situation sometimes. And I think that that's what it was more so than anything. But we're the same people and we wanted the same things. And, you know, we're kind of doing this dance, this circle of like, man, how do we get to the goal that we want so badly, you know? And it was the best thing that could have ever happened for me. It was the best thing that probably could have happened for him, for us to come back and to get through it. And when you're like brothers, and honestly, House and I are like brothers, like, man, you fight. And then you make up. And then it's like it never happened. And it was like it never happened. So Jack comes back his senior year. And again, I should mention earlier in his career, Jack battled some injuries too. Like, man, he's been through a lot, you know, to get to where he is. So he comes back his senior year, and his senior year is not going great. You know, like he's getting on base a lot, but he's hitting 220, you know, like for a guy that's a 300 career hitter that, but he's doing some things to still contribute. He's getting some big hits here. He's walking a lot. He's striking out a lot, but he's walking a lot, getting on base. And when that whole situation started developing, you know, where it's like, I think we had a leadoff walk. And then I think we had another guy reach on base and it's like, oh my God, Jack's hitting 215, 220 or something. Like there is not a human being in the world that I would rather have up in this situation right now. And I don't care what he's done today. I don't care what he's done this year. I don't care what he's done, whatever. Like this dude is ready. He's prepared his entire life. His entire life, not his BP today, not for the past couple months, his entire life, he is prepared for this situation. And to see that preparation come through and for him to hit that triple that gives us a lead, we ultimately win. You know, he wins the Big East championship. He gets to go play in the NCAA tournament in his fifth year after all the stuff he had been through. Man, I'm starting to tear up right now thinking about it. You know, like it's what it's about. It's what college athletics is about. It's what coaching is about, that you hope and pray that you can give the experience to these kids that they so badly want. And the other lesson is for our guys, like you don't know when it's going to be your turn. You don't know when you are going to be that guy. Jack a million times along the way could have said, man, this isn't for me. This year's not going great. You know, like I'm not having the year that I want. I, you know, Xavier's not perfect. Like, man, I need to find something else. Or he could have just said, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to do everything within my human ability to prepare for whatever situation comes my way. And that's what he did from day one until day 2000, however many days he spent at Xavier. And for it to culminate in him with the winning hit in the Big East tournament to send us the NCAA tournament, like, man, it's you talk about storybook endings beyond that, you know. So the coolest moment of my coaching career, I don't think anything will ever surpass it, but just an awesome, awesome thing to just be a bystander for.
I remember when you guys came north last year and you were finally playing a home game and I was going through everything and we were doing our – I call it a preseason conversation, but it's really not. It's really kind of catching up on where you are at that point in the year. And I said, Billy, Jack's average. And he goes, I remember you telling me the stats don't tell the whole picture. He's still doing a lot of things right. The average, it'll come around. And then by the end of the year, you get into the Big East play and then you step up in the biggest moment and it doesn't matter. You just want your best player there at the best situation.
No doubt.
And he delivered.
No doubt.
So I lied. I said I had two more. I still have two more, but one of them's cool. Quick. We talked about the pitching. I should mention, you look back at some of the draft picks that Xavier has had. A lot of them are pitchers. Mm-hmm. So you talk about how hard it is to pitch in this park, but it's Zach Lowther, Garrett Schilling, Greg Jacknowitz. Connor Grammis. You know, guys that... And I'm sure I'm sure I'm missing guys. I'm sure there are alumni that are screaming right now listening to this. But... just off the top of my head in the last few years, guys that have come through here, this program has developed some pretty good pitching.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and again, it goes back to the resources we have. I think we have the resources to match up against any team in the Midwest and really in the country from a developmental standpoint. We've got an awesome pitching coach in Doug Willie. We've got awesome athletic training staff. We've got an awesome strength training staff with Coach Jennings. I mean, it checks all the boxes, you know, and for us, when we go out recruiting, the biggest thing for us is to find the right guys that are going to use all those resources, right? Because the NCAA restricts how much you can actually do. We can't make them be here from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. every single night, nor do we want them. But we want guys that are driven to be great, you know, and I say it time after time after time after time. But this program is about guys that want to be great. If you want to be good, that's fine. Go someplace else. You want to be OK? That's fine, too. It's your prerogative. Go someplace else. Guys that want to be great will succeed here, and they will be great.
All right. My last question, but go ahead if you have anything else.
No, you're doing a great job. Okay.
You're 14-14 on the season. Let's give people a little rundown of 2024 Xavier baseball.
Yeah, we're 14-14, like you said. There's been some good wins in there and some tough losses that have been a little bit disappointed in. I like our team. You know, we're a veteran group and we're a little bit banged up right now. All three of our normal outfielders are on crutches and all three of them are out for extended periods of time. So that's been tough to overcome. But it's next man up, you know, and I said at the beginning of the year, like, man, I feel like we have 12 or 13 starters right now. And it's tough for me to put the nine out there to start every single game. That problem's been rectified. I don't have that problem quite as much because we just don't have quite as many options. But I like our team. I really do, you know, and when you hit adversity like this, where it's like, man, this guy's not here and this guy's not here and this guy's not here. It's opportunity for guys to take advantage of those opportunities and to grow, you know, and when those guys come back, we'll be a stronger team because of it. So getting those guys, those opportunities, those reps, those at-bats, those innings, it's going to make them better on an individual level and it's going to make us better on a team-wide level. So yeah, we start conference play with UConn this weekend. Excited to get up there again. They're the rabbit that we've been chasing, you know, and I think I'm certainly not going to say that we've surpassed them because we beat them last year in the tournament, but they set the tone for what it means to be a successful program. I had incredible respect for Coach Penders and Coach McDonald and Jeff and their whole crew. They do things the right way. And it's the most healthy rivalry I've ever been a part of. Like, I love those guys to death and I can't wait to kick their ass every time we play them. And I think they feel the same way about us. So it's great baseball, two teams that pride themselves on playing hard and competitiveness and hard-nosed baseball and doing things the right way. And I think, you know, anytime we get together, man, it's awesome, awesome games to watch.
I would just encourage people, get out to Hayden Field, watch some Xavier baseball games. They're a ton of fun. And better yet, like, top four make it to Prasco for the Big East tournament at the end of the year. That is an incredible event. Xavier, you know, knock on wood, you guys are normally there. And I'm hoping that you're there again this year because that it's such a cool event that you get to host the Big East tournament, give away an NCAA tournament bid right here in Mason. I hope it stays here forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great, well-run event. The tickets are free, so admission is free. Food is free. Ice cream is free. Everything is free up there.
Oh, that ice cream is free.
The ice cream is free.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
You got to keep me out of there.
Billy, thanks so much for joining the program today. As somebody that you yourself has been around Xavier for a long time, you bleed blue more than a lot of people. And you care about this, whether it's baseball, the athletics, or like you said, growing up a Xavier basketball fan, being here and having somebody that cares about the program and loves wearing that X, I think people appreciate that.
I appreciate it. It's a special place, you know, and again, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's such a cool experience. And yeah, like Adam said, I know this is a basketball crowd, basketball centric. Come out to Hayden Field. You know, we appreciate your support and in all sports. You know, we have such great athletic department across the board, and we all appreciate the support of the Xavier fan base.
Yeah. Some people might be wondering, you know, this is going to come out next week, Masters week. So sure. That's why I'm wearing the hat. But, you know, Sean is very busy. I think you can empathize with this, trying to build a roster for next season. And so, you know, I told him that you were coming on. He was very excited about that. And obviously, I think he wishes he could have joined you. But, you know, I think right now is crunch time in college basketball world. And we want him to go build the best roster possible next year. So
that's right.
Yeah. Oh, I want him to go build the best roster possible, too. No, you do. Again, like I said, there's no bigger Xavier basketball fan on this campus than I am. So, no, Sean's a man, you know, and we're so lucky as coaches with the depth of unbelievable coaches we have in our department, you know, and Sean obviously being at the forefront of, I think back to so many things, and it's not like we talk every day or anything, but like I watch him on the sidelines. I watch how he interacts with his players. I've seen him at practice before, and I take things away from that. I learn from that because he's as good as it gets. I think he's the best coach in college basketball, and we're so fortunate as a staff, as a department, to be able to learn from somebody like that.
Yeah, my favorite days of practice are the days when Billy shows up to watch and we get to sit there and talk during practice.
Well, Billy, thanks so much. And thank you to all of you for watching here on this episode of the Sean Miller Podcast. It was brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Deer Park Roofing, also the official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and our friends at TGE Solar. This has been another episode of the Sean Miller Podcast.
This has been the Sean Miller Podcast, presented by Deer Park Roofing, with your hosts, Paul Frichtner and Adam Baum. Join us again soon for another episode with the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller.
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Milano, Italy.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Abuja, Nigeria.
And
I chose Xavier University
for its education,
more opportunities,
for passion, because it felt like home.
The community,
campus life,
D1 basketball.
Because I love Cincinnati.
I came here
to be a Musketeer.
I am.
I am.
I am.
And we are the faces of Xavier.
The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit DeerParkRoofing.com.